Yeah, talking about eufy.com. The Eufy video lock is unbelievable. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it at Best Buy stores starting on May 20th. What is it? It's a smart lock, 2K cam, and doorbell, 3-in-1, triple security, so you can have everything you need in one device rather than install many pieces on your front door. It's not just for security, but also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys like my wife. You can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated camera. It's easy to install and set up with just a Phillips head screwdriver, no drilling required. It's got a keyless entry. No more fumbling for the keys. When hands are full, never worry about kids losing keys or passing among the renters of your house. You got a rental property out there, this is a must-have. I love this product. Just got it a couple weeks ago. Huge fan. Have the Ring camera. It's okay. It's not as great as this, so I swapped it out. Go to Eufy Video Lock today on YouTube. That's EUFY Video Lock, or visit EUFYOfficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your front door.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
My name is Nick Palmisano, and it is my absolute pleasure to welcome you all here tonight. There are people in this world that complain about problems. There are people in this world that help other people solve problems. And then there are people that take giant, unimaginable problems on their own shoulders and see them to their rightful conclusion. I, of course, am talking about Sarah Verardo. When her husband was badly wounded and she did not like the way that she had to deal with the process of getting him help, she started working with the Independence Fund and has grown it to this amazing organization that it is today. When Afghans needed help, as Afghanistan was falling, she put together a group of people to go over there, connected all the dots so that that mission was possible, and is responsible for saving 12,000 Afghans. When Sarah saw that veterans needed to be treated differently when dealing with law enforcement in order to keep both them and law enforcement safe in high intense situations, she created the Veterans Justice Initiative and worked with the amazing North Carolina legislature to put in place laws that protected veterans and law enforcement. And that program is running to great success. There is literally nothing she is afraid of taking on. And she has realized that the suicide epidemic among veterans is significant. And so here we are today. The latest challenge that Sarah Verardo has taken on that she most assuredly will conquer. And with that, I'd like to introduce you to Sarah Verardo.
Thank you all. All right, is this working? Yes? You all know I'm very bad at technology and geography, so we'll get that out of the way. Thank you so much for being here with us. You know, I was thinking today, we've had a whirlwind of a day, and tomorrow we have even more activities. And I was thinking about people who volunteer their time and their energy and their platform. And I mean, there are so many of you, and I'm looking at you, Brandon, Eli, and of course these incredible panelists on the stage, but who use their platform for good. And just as much, oftentimes we see people who kind of wrap themselves in the flag, in the American flag, and there's nothing below the surface of that. And it's very disheartening to see these people who are talking with no action behind it about what it means to stand and walk truly shoulder to shoulder with those who have kept us a nation of freedom. We have an all-volunteer force. There is no draft. there is no compulsion. And yet there are people, and I'm looking at you, Af. Af, raise your hand.
Yeah, Af!
People like Af, who, well, whose actual name is Ashvin Ariana. But people like Af, who have spent the better part of the last two decades deploying back to back to back to back over parts of the world that we, maybe just me, but most of us, would not be able to identify on a map. And then there are real people, like everyone in this room, they don't just wrap themselves in the flag. They are walking the walk every single day to make sure that those who have worn our nation's uniform are not alone. They have the services and resources we need. And North Carolina, thanks to Speaker Moore, Representative Willis, Justice Berger, and so many of our incredible leaders, truly is leading the way for this entire country. And other states should take note and should follow example. So as we gather this evening, I'm hopeful that we can come up with real, tactical, tangible ways that we can end this absolute horror that is veteran suicide. In this country, just about every 65 minutes, a veteran dies by his or her own hand. And I want you to think about that, because sometimes as I'm in meetings or the day is, Sarah Blake, I thought you were coming up here to fix this mic. Am I good?
Okay.
Sometimes as I'm in a meeting or I'm doing events and I'm thinking, okay, we've had three veterans die in this span of time. And this is something that should be sobering, and it should absolutely be personal to every person in this room, every person who enjoys the freedom that we have the privilege, we hit the jackpot by waking up and being born in the United States of America. The very least we can do is make sure that those who go, so that we don't have to, come back and truly feel that support of a grateful nation by more than just waving a flag at homecoming, but by enacting real programs and policies and support that will help them on a road that is often very dark and very lonely. And you're gonna hear from true experts tonight. One final thing, and for those who are joining us tomorrow night, you are going to hear some incredible stories from our dear, dear friend, Gary Sinise. If you're not currently attending the concert, please come out. Gary is a true American patriot. He is an amazing man. His son was in his 20s, Mac, died in December after a very courageous battle with cancer. And this is Gary's first concert back since he has said goodbye to his son. And he's doing it because he's been with Michael and I truly since day one, and we're so grateful. And I'd love you to come out and show Gary how much America truly does, truly cherishes the way he continues to honor and love our service members. One final special thing, and you're gonna hear more about this tomorrow night. One of my very favorite people is in the audience, and I just spotted him, and I am so grateful. This man is, when I tell you, a true American patriot and hero. I have these letters, and if there was, God forbid, ever a fire, this would be one of the things that I would grab. And these letters start, and they say, "Dear Sarah and Mike." And then the next year it says, "Dear Sarah, Mike, and baby Grace. Dear Sarah, Mike, baby Grace, Mary Scott." And then we get to the point where we've got three children, and the letters kept coming every November of every year. Norm Follner, who is with us this evening, World War II era Navy veteran, and every year for his birthday, for more than a decade, he has sent what he calls a birthday present to himself, to the Independence Fund. He is one of the truest, most amazing people. I know Mr. Follner joins us from Utah this evening, and I am so grateful. I'm gonna come down there and hug you right now. Please stand up, Mr. Follner, if you can. Truly a privilege to be here with you this evening, especially among so many incredible heroes. So thank you so much.
Well, that's it. Thanks for coming, guys. Just wanted to let you know, America is going to be fantastic. Off we go.
I actually get the microphone tonight, one of my favorite things, so I appreciate being up here. So I do want to introduce a really dear friend to the Independence Fund and a dear friend to the state of North Carolina, Dr. Campbell. Could you please come forward? Say a couple of words, please.
Thank you.
Hello, everyone. I get the distinct privilege of standing before you tonight and being the least impressive veteran you will see tonight. As they have said, I'm a recovering Army surgeon. My job downrange was to try to preserve life, to protect life in any way I could. I knew my role, but I stand around these folks here, and they're the true heroes. They're the reasons that I went there, is to try to do anything I could. And to kind of put it in perspective, based on their resumes compared to mine, my last deployment, as we were processing to head over downrange, we were at the weapons range getting all the surgeons qualified, which is one of the probably most dangerous things in the military. It was my third deployment. Someone came up to me and they said, well, listen, what if there's a surgeon and they don't do well on the PT test? They don't qualify with their weapons range. What do you do with that surgeon? I said, well, usually we promote them. tradition. So. But my time in uniform has been over for about 6 years. I've had losses overseas, friends and patients, and unfortunately, I've had losses since I've been out of the military. I have learned that my role as a civilian now is not to just preserve life as a surgeon in the Army, but to preserve life as a fellow veteran, and that's what a lot of tonight is a lot of about. Many of us have had conversations with our brothers and sisters, which have ranged from support to pleading. I believe that our efforts over there have found success because as a group, we have allowed ourselves to do a simple thing, and that is to give ourselves permission. To give ourselves permission to admit that we're struggling, to give ourselves permission to vocalize that we're struggling, and to give ourselves permission that it's okay to ask for help, and to form a community of veterans and caregivers that we know that when you get in that dark place, there are people there. This is one of the reasons that I've gotten involved with the Independence Fund. They said, you know, Sarah has never made a mistake. I think she's made a couple of mistakes. One is asking me to come up here to speak, but also to ask me to be on the board of this great organization, which is one of the greatest honors of my life. But especially when it comes to Operation Resiliency, is to take veterans and get them back together with the guys that they were there downrange with. Not only to give them permission to vocalize their struggles, but to realize that some of the guys they were there with, that they had no idea, they thought that they were twice the soldier they were, 100 times braver, that they may vocalize and say, listen, I'm having these same struggles too. So we've helped over 600 veterans to do that. We've given them permission to struggle, to admit their struggles, and then given them tools to deal with that struggle. I've seen my mission as I've gotten out of uniform to protect the guys that I was over there with. I've been successful at times. I've been unsuccessful at times. Dan, who's on this panel, he said some words that have really meant the world to me, and it's a message that I've passed along with brothers and sisters that have been struggling. And he said, your death may end your suffering, but it is only the beginning of other suffering. Your death is something that happens to everyone else. Your life is not your own. Keep your hands off of it. And I've had those words with friends in so many ways. I've never put it that eloquently, and I appreciate you, brother, for that. So in just a moment, I'm going to stop talking and let y'all talk to the interesting people, because these folks, I have so much admiration for them. Tim is taught me that all the assaults on masculinity that we see, he has shown me that humanity is an important part of masculinity. Tulsi, I want to be Tulsi when I grow up. You're just so awesome. I do feel like that, I try to pay them back.
I don't know how I feel. Like, he's talking about masculinity, then he wants to be like me, and humanity, I'm a little discombobulated.
Yeah, no, you're just so cool. You just really are so cool. I like to feel that I pay back in a small way, that I do feel like I'm Tim's inspiration for physical fitness and physique.
Geez, Tim, would you go exercise? You're so fat. So, but my last task here is to introduce our moderator for this discussion, which is Colonel Mike Hudson. Mike is a 30-year Marine veteran. He has 4 combat tours, both in combat as in contingency tours, 2 as a commanding officer of a helicopter squadron, and 1 as a Marine Expeditionary Unit. He is currently the Vice President of Clear Force, which is a Virginia-based tech company that's focused on human capital risk, decreasing workforce violence, and suicide prevention. He sits on a board of a nonprofit that services vets and 2 government boards that are focused on national security. So it's time for me to be quiet and let y'all see some impressive veterans, but I hope that you guys enjoy this talk. I hope this spurs a lot more talk, but to the veterans out there, give yourself permission. We are all in this together, and when you get to that dark time, know that you call. Our obligation, if we're not in that dark time, is that we're there for the others. So God bless everyone for being here tonight. God bless this panel and the moderator. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Grant, I appreciate that that introduction. We'll jump right in. Hey, it's my privilege to guide targeting a solution focused on the veteran suicide issue. I'd also point out that in some cases, this conversation can be hard. If you feel the need to step outside, please do. You don't need to stay. Come back in when you're ready to re-engage. Hey, so what I'd really like to point out as we get started on this conversation is a big thank out to Sarah and the Independence Fund. And I'd also, we'd be remiss if we didn't thank Old Armory Brew Company for allowing us to invade their space, if you will. So tonight, the Independence Fund has assembled a remarkable group of individuals sitting up here on the stage. We're going to get to them pretty quickly, and you can see from their ad lib already early on, it's not going to take them long to get into this conversation. Hey, but I would encourage you, even that when I read through their bios, take a look. If you have a copy of their program, they are really impressive individuals. Some of you may know them from the service of this nation, either in uniform or out, but I'm really privileged to be up here today to talk about veteran suicide prevention, something that is important to, I think, to all of us who have served and to those that support us that who have served. So, Tulsi, I'll start with you first. A 4-time congresswoman, she's a combat veteran with more than 21 years of service in uniform, and now serves as a lieutenant colonel in the United States Army Reserve, commanding the 440th Civil Affairs Battalion. She also leads her own nonprofit organizations, We Must Protect. Sitting next to her, we got Tim Kennedy. He's also a veteran, long history of service to this nation, and a former mixed martial arts fighter. So if I get out of line, I know that's going to work out. I do see there's a map back there. That's I wasn't right. Quite sure if you put that there or not, but it's not lost on me. Okay, he holds numerous black belts, including Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and is U.S. Army combative instructor. He is a serial entrepreneur. He owns a dozen businesses and companies. He's also a New York Times best-selling author. He's recognized as a firearms expert and has spent a life helping to dedicate veterans reach their full potential. And the one taking notes is going to be grading me later, so Dan, I hope I do well, is a U.S. Army veteran as well, co-host of the Drinking Bros podcast and the Citizen Veteran podcast. He also talks about the struggles that veterans face when they return to civilian life. He plays a large role in the veteran community, supporting veterans' causes, and can be seen often participating in charity events and fundraisers. For the fellow Marines in the audience, it is 1 Marine, 3 soldiers, but I think I'll be okay. Don't feel threatened.
Well, it's not a spelling contest.
Yeah, well, there's pictures in my book.
Yeah.
You don't have this. Hey, but let's get serious a minute and dive in here. I want to start the conversation really around the importance of connectedness. I mean, this is the eyeball-to-eyeball, veterans talking to veterans, veterans engaging with those that support them. It's that honest and open conversation that I think Grant started to tee up. So, Tulsi, I'm going to start with you. And if you don't mind sharing, and with you, your personal experience in Congress or as a commanding officer, some insights around how you think we can help or how this audience can help engage veterans with that eyeball-to-eyeball conversation.
There's nothing more powerful than that peer-to-peer engagement. I spoke with a few of you here. I had a chance to meet earlier before we started. And what I shared with you, I've shared with veterans I've met over the years, regardless of what generation they may have served in, from World War II veterans to Korean and Vietnam War veterans to the Gulf War and so on, as soon as we see each other and we say hello, we're already family. We don't have to go and break through those barriers that very often exist. I have found myself in so many situations where within about 2 minutes, I'm talking to somebody I feel like I've known my entire life. I think this is the most powerful resource that is underutilized as we look at how best to tackle this. Obviously, Sarah has recognized this, and it's part of the work that she's doing at the Independence Fund. But there is incredible opportunity within government institutions, whether they be state or federal, within the VA, to not just wait for somebody to make the call, but to know that all of us have gone through different struggles at different times in our life. And maybe you don't get to that point where you have the strength to make the call, or even to call your best friend and reveal that vulnerability or that weakness and ask for help, which means we have to be proactive. Get out into different communities, whether they be big cities or rural communities. I just came from my 2 weeks of annual duty with the Army Reserve, and we had civil affairs teams out across these small Pacific Island countries. One of the countries I stopped in was the Federated States of Micronesia. On an island, roughly 70,000 people, it's one of these countries where people can come to the United States without a visa. It is extremely economically impoverished, so the ticket to success or opportunity is most frequently in all these small countries joining the U.S. military. Problem is, there's no VA support or resources out there. There's like a little veterans club that somebody started, but it's very decentralized. And so one of the things out there, they said, well, we don't know where all of our veterans are. This is a small country in the Middle Pacific. I come from Hawaii, the most remote island chain in the world. And even in our communities in Hawaii, the VA is not sending out quote unquote strike teams or peer-to-peer teams to go out and find veterans where they are in order to just say, hey, how's it going? Start the conversation. What to speak of getting to the point where you actually know what resources are available to you. All of that is to say we have to, as a society, lean into this, and it all just starts with having that conversation of saying, how's it going?
Hey, Tim, I saw you on a panel maybe 6 months ago, and you talked about someone you knew, a close friend of yours, where you picked up on some warning signs and moved quickly and changed an outcome. Not to lead the witness, but in your remarks, you might kind of touch on that. I thought it was pretty powerful.
Yeah, unfortunately, that doesn't narrow it down in my brain because I've had to do it maybe a dozen times in the past 5 years. As I'm coming out here, I had to do it this week. But this is the responsibility of what we're supposed to be doing. And no one left behind, right? It's so easy to say until you're done with service, and then you get to forget about your friends, I guess, or until you change units and you don't need to call and check in on them anymore, or until you get a new girlfriend and you don't need to, your battle buddy that was actually keeping you company on every single 4-day pass that you ever had. And it's despicable. It's deplorable. We are the most capable and competent force to ever walk the face of this planet. And this is a problem that can be solved, but it has to be solved with courage. And any problem takes a lot of little bits of work. And I see extraordinary acts of heroism. Eli, when you guys decided with the Unsubscribe podcast to do a holiday special, and how many comments did you have that was, I was thinking about killing myself, but then I heard you. You know, the work that you guys do endlessly, that should set the example of what we should be doing all the time. If I say right now, think of a friend that might be struggling, and you haven't reached out to that friend, you haven't tried to contact them, you know, like the responsibility is on all of us to solve this problem. Unfortunately, the solutions aren't as black and white. One time I was the asshole. I call my friend. He's telling me that he regrets everything that he's ever done in special operations. And I really just piss him off to a point where he directs all of that hate and anger that was at him towards me. And he wakes up the next morning sober. He sees the sun. I didn't get to talk to him for like 5 years because he was so mad at me, but he was alive. Another one, I have to drive 12 hours to El Paso when we do a health and wellness check on one of my soldiers, and we find him in a moment of crisis. I have to sleep with him in a hotel bed that I have to pay for because we couldn't get, I'm on the phone with Sarah as I'm driving trying to find a crisis place to put this guy, and there was not a mechanism or a place outside of the government to fix this problem of this guy trying to kill himself in real time. But it really just comes down to the individual that steps up to make a difference. And I'm just gonna empower you. This is like, cool, you let me talk for 1 second. First thing I'm gonna do, I'm gonna point the finger at you and say, this is your problem and you can solve it. This is not some insurmountable thing. You can solve this.
No, I think that's spot on. And actually it was a story where you talked about having to drive the 12 hours. I mean, again, you think through that, how often do we drive 12 hours to do anything? I mean, if you think about the commitment and the time, recognizing that's one way. There's a time on target, and then you got to RTB back out. So that's awesome. I thought that was really good. Hey, Dan, do you mind jumping in a little bit on this? I've seen you talk a lot about it's okay to be not okay. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe part of what Tim's point to is all of us in the audience, super interested in your thoughts about just us being self-aware of who we are and how we can ask for that help.
Well, honest conversation, right? That's a good place to start, regardless of what the scenario is. But in this instance, I think it's particularly important because this is a topic that most people keep to themselves when they're not feeling well, whatever that means to you. They usually we are kind of conditioned, especially this group of people, to be like, drive on, whatever stupid shit we say, right? But the truth is, the truth is, sunlight is the best disinfectant, right? Like, for two reasons. One, you can't diagnose without data. And two, as Tulsi was talking about, a lot of these people, and it's probably true of most of the veterans in here, had no idea what they were entitled to or where to find it when they got out, right? And that's a big problem for us, right? It just is. And our community doesn't pat itself on the back that much. It doesn't whine that much. It just kind of, we have that drive-on attitude. But part of that is maintaining the human weapon, as CZ likes to call it, right? Human capital, the human weapon. You wouldn't go out into the field with rust in your chamber, and you shouldn't go out with rust in your brain. You know what I mean? And these are just frank conversations. It's not good or bad, it just is what it is, right? And it needs to be dealt with.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I mean, the idea that, and one of the challenges I think you're hitting on, is this idea that veterans have to do two key things. We have to self-assess, then we have to seek help. And in many cases, I think what Tim was talking about, Tulsi as well, and Dan, the idea that we need to, in this group, in this community, be proactive. And in some cases, the data and the science is just how well we know our friend.
Sure. Right? Well, that's definitely a big part of it. So you're 90 to 93% of communication is nonverbal, right? Like, your buddy's not always gonna come out and say, hey, there's something wrong with me. So that's why it's important to both of your guys' points, to be close with these people, right? Learn their body language. If you feel like your brain is better at being a brain than you are at thinking most of the time. If you feel like something's wrong, it probably is. Just ask the question. Make them tell you no.
And I think it's also just taking the opportunity to show versus tell that it's okay to not be okay, what you said. You know, I again, just came out of a training period with my soldiers, and I took the opportunity to express and share with them some of the experiences, personal experiences that I had had, and that during different deployments or during different situations, when I was in a leadership position, I had my friends that I was able to turn to when I didn't have a tough face to put on for my unit. And to show that vulnerability, to make it so that it's okay for others to know they can do the same, I think oftentimes does a lot more to provide that encouragement than just saying, hey, you know, call me anytime. It's not an easy thing to do for any of us to ask for help, what to speak of when you're at a moment of radical desperation.
Yeah, making it not normal, because obviously, when you're in a moment of crisis, that's not a normal moment. You know, that is a far outlier of a dangerous position that you're in. But I think everyone realizing that no one here is perfect, like least of all me. My wife and I were talking a couple of weeks ago, and you know, we're talking about like 18 years marriage, you know, like how are we going to, you want to go to some marriage counseling? Do we want to go to, like, how do we spice things up? I got to talk her into going to Paris with me. And, you know, she was crying about some of the struggles of, you know, being a mom and having me as her husband, frankly, having to travel. And we were coming back from an overseas trip and Haiti's burning down and we're figuring out if I'm going to Haiti. And it was absolute madness. And as she was crying, she's like, I'm not all right. I'm like, nobody's all right. Like, there's not a person in this room that's perfect. There's nobody that's all right. And there's nothing wrong with that. Recognizing the degrees of that, the spectrum of, like, at what point do I need help? You know, I have lots of friends that I can call to help me move. But I also have some very close friends that I can call in the middle of the night when I'm in a dark place. And having the self-awareness of realizing that that's totally fine. And it's perfectly all right to be able to pick up a phone and call that friend and have that friend not judge you. And like what Tulsi just said, having that relationship, that intimacy with that person where that's okay. They're not gonna be judging you. They're not gonna be like, all right, yeah, I'm here to like ruin your life, take all your crap. Instead, I care for you and I want the best for you. And I think those two things can happen concurrently.
Yeah, is this thing on now?
Yeah.
Can you guys turn my volume up? I kind of mumble. Well, I can't talk much louder. Can you turn the microphone up? This is technology, right? Do we have people running this thing? All right, cool. So the other part of that is that we're biologically programmed as human beings to serve each other, right? Like in every instance, whether it, like every animalistic instinct you have, which has manifested itself in building families, building cities, building countries, etc., right? We do this stuff all for a reason.
Joke.
Technology's in work right now. I think they're going for round three.
They like your voice so much. They're trying to.
No, this is a microphone. It's supposed to let me talk at my normal level.
It's supposed to amplify your wisdom.
You have to hold it slightly close, though. You know, like this close.
It's almost like I don't do
that. There we go. That one's it. That one's good. Yeah.
I'll take the chair if you want to take the podium. Hey, while Dan's sorting that out, I'm going to shift a little bit, and you can jump back in when you're ready to go, on resiliency, maybe as a read ahead for everyone else here. Once we shift a little bit off of helping and engaging, I want to shift the conversation to individual resilience, but I think it's a really good coping mechanism. But Dan, back to you.
Yeah, what I was saying was...
Oh, yeah! Look, they love you.
If I could point out, I think that was a Marine that helped you out, soldier. You'd be fine.
Every chance you get. What I was saying was we're biologically programmed to serve each other as human beings. And that's true of most animal life, actually. Everything we do from interpersonal connection to building cities is essentially we're building walls around what matters to us, right? Which we may need another one at the southern border. We'll see. But yeah, it's like that's when you're going to feel most fulfilled in your life. There's nothing more... There's no worse situation to be in my opinion, than to be somebody who's truly not afraid of death anymore, who sees no purpose in life, right? That is the basement that people find themselves in frequently. And, you know, so what's the, I mean, usually you can find the solution to a problem if you just define what the problem is. Now we've defined the problem, right? These people need purpose. They don't need a pat on the back or like, oh, it's okay, you know, to be a shitbag your whole life because some bad stuff happened to you. No, it's time to wake up, right? And it's, maybe that's harsh, but it's true.
Yeah, and maybe that, to pivot to the resiliency part, I think where Dan's going at, and where I'd like to kind of get the panel and start, Tim, with you on this, but I think individual resiliency is an important coping mechanism. I think it's something that when we started our journey in the military, they kind of trained us to be that way, resilient, solve problems. In some cases, that can be an impediment, as already mentioned. But I think, in my view, when I think about resiliency at the individual level, I think about being mentally and physically strong, right? And then as a commander, and all of us have been leaders, we think about individual resiliency as the way to drive unit readiness that allows us to have organizational capability that can be deployed on short notice to solve problems. So, Tim, interested, I mean, I know you're in this space big time on individual resiliency.
Yeah. I wish there was a way that we could separate building resilience and mental toughness and kind of determination without the thing that creates it, which is the hard work and suffering. I would love that I could take a pill or I could like have this belief or I could open up my shirt and there's an S under there and I'm all of a sudden I'm capable of doing all these things, specifically mentally tough things. It's just not true. The way that you get that is by doing hard things, usually via suffering. And we've lived in a very comfortable time of our lives where I can pick up my phone and have food delivered to my house. And you know, I'm not forging my existence out of the woods. There's something really important about us struggling. There's not growth without some form of struggle. Your muscles don't get stronger unless they suffer. You know, I don't think you get mentally tough without suffering. So under resilience, I have found I do a million little things, and all of those little things build up to give me some edge over what might be a dark moment. Whether that's being in an ice bath or being in a sauna or getting my ass beat on the mats or going and hanging out and training with some freak phenom athletes or try to intellectually hang with Dan or try to get in a debate with Tulsi. Like every single one of these things becomes challenging and it makes me grow. And through that growth creates some form of resiliency and toughness. And we could go on like what I eat, if I smoke, how much I drink, what kind of drugs I do, what kind of relationship I have with my wife, what kind of intentionality do I have with my children, how much sleep do I have? At what point do each of these matter more than the next? They all matter. And that's the million little decisions. The resiliency of a unit readiness, you know, we break down the core metal tasks. We have this mission essential task list. We say that these are the things that we have to do, and we break it all the way down to an individual level. And then it builds out to the unit level. And then from that unit level, they're able to accomplish these tasks. Well, the task is, I don't want to fall into this dark moment of crisis. Cool. The individual requirements for me not to fall into this moment is I have to be physically healthy. What does physically healthy look like? I need to be exercising. I need to get outside. I need to have a good relationship with my wife. I'm not having some side chick. I'm not yelling at my kids and then feeling regret for the way that I responded in anger because I didn't get enough sleep the night before. I'm financially secure. These are all little tiny things that ultimately put me in a really healthy position to be able to help others. The Army's definition of leadership is purpose, direction, and motivation. That is what I have to provide to somebody to go and do it. And more often than not, we lose that purpose. And then we forget the reason why we're even doing all of these little things. For me, that purpose is going to be ongoing and for the rest of my life, for the people to my left and the people to my right and my family most of all that I have chosen to support. Like I said, I'm going to marry this woman. I married her. Then I made babies with her. These are my responsibility now. They are part of my purpose, just like my brothers and my sisters that I serve with. So it is my responsibility to do all of these millions of little things so I'm ready for when the phone rings in the middle of the night to go and help a friend. I have to be in a position to self-rescue and be in a position to be able to help somebody else. So do the million little things.
Yeah, I think that's spot on.
I'll just jump in here. That purpose piece is really what leads to the third component of what true resilience is. You have the physical toughness and the mental toughness, but what purpose brings is that spiritual well-being. You know, I think too often sometimes it's like, okay, you got to be tough, you got to be resilient. That can be translated into being like, hey, just suck it up. Whatever's going on, just suck it up and drive through. Put your head down, do the freaking work, get the job done. And then you're like, okay, that one's done, what's next? But what are you actually grounded in? And whether that spiritual well-being comes from a religious standpoint, you are dedicating your life in service to God, service to others, or it comes from being rooted in that purpose of serving a cause, serving others, something greater than yourself, using your life where you can positively impact others, that answers the question of like, why? Why should I be physically fit? Why do I need to be mentally tough? What am I using my life for? Why is it important that I wake up every day and be this capable, maximally capable human being? Without that sense of purpose is where the darkness starts to settle in.
I would add, what you're hinting towards is being a value add. Like, if we're setting the bar just not suicidal, that's a pretty low bar.
Low bar.
Right. So, and I don't think you're going to get people to approach that if they're on the other side of it. It's like, oh, all, because where's the light at the end of that tunnel? There is none. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Hey, Dan, you also maybe go a little bit more. You talk about human factors as an important component of this conversation. I mean, if someone's self-assessing, back to what we talked earlier about being able to identify friends in our orbit, can you add something on that?
Yeah, I mean, nobody knows you better than you, frankly, right? And we have, I suppose we all have some level of cognitive dissonance in our day-to-day mood, right? Like, I think I'm a pleasant guy, but that's obviously not true. But
do you want me to poll the audience?
Yeah, I think everybody will be on one side of that.
Poll his friends.
Yeah. But yeah, the self-assessment part is it's really important because being aware of it, it doesn't even matter if you can articulately communicate it to other people. I think if you're just aware of it, then it becomes very obvious to everyone around you, right? You start giving the signs, I suppose, right? I think that's, we had a question at the panel in January from someone who had lost someone recently and said they didn't see the signs. Like, well, they were there, right? They're always there. So what can you learn from that, I guess, right? Is where I would bring it back to. As far as human factor goes, it's like the most important part is being interconnected. We're designed to be this way, right? I mean, it used to be kind of a funny trope about serial killers or mass shooters or something. Oh, it's just a quiet guy in the neighborhood, right? Well, that should have been a warning sign that he didn't talk to anybody. Really? Like, that was our 1980s and 90s measure for somebody that was just an ordinary guy from the neighborhood that didn't talk to anybody and kept himself? No, that's not how human beings are.
Yeah, I think that's right. I want to shift a little bit, if we're all good, to one of the helping mechanisms is mental health. I mean, I'm not saying suicide is a mental health sole problem. I'm not advocating down that path. But I do know that many that seek mental health find support, get connected, help course correct. But the question kind of to the panel is, and I'll start with Tulsi, is the idea of access sometimes becomes hard.
Yeah.
Right, and I'm interested in your thoughts on what we can do as a community to enhance or increase that access.
I think the first step is just dealing with the reality of stigma that's there. I think that it's unfortunate a lot of times veterans who have deployed or served overseas are automatically perceived by those who don't have any entry into our community as victims or damaged or people who have to be handled with kid gloves because of the potential for post-traumatic stress or other effects, whether it's real or not. And so I think that how do we as a community, whether you're a part of the veteran community or not, express how much you value those who've worn the uniform, not only because they've served, but because of the unique experience, leadership experience, working as a member of a team, the level of discipline, the ability to stay focused and accomplish a mission. There are so many different assets that veterans bring to the table. We as a society should value that and put that at the top of the stack when you see a veteran applying for a job, whether it be for a business, a school, or a nonprofit, or any organization. I think that helps with this, just keeping focused on that purpose, providing that purpose and helping through that transition. Access, you know, when you look at the government standpoint, and I served for 8 years in Congress, and there are a lot of reforms and change that need to take place within our government and within the VA especially. Even with some of the best efforts underway, the bureaucracy, unfortunately, oftentimes creates far too many obstacles for people to get the help they need at the moment they need it. I've lost track of how many of my friends have called me or strangers who've reached out to me and said, I tried, I called once, I called twice, I called three times. They said, cool, we'll see you in 3 weeks. He's like, I might not be here in 3 weeks. I think one of the easiest things that the VA could do, and I'll just go back to the thing I said at the first, my first comments, was just hire veterans to go talk to veterans. Find them where they are. Build those relationships. Recruit them to be a part of a volunteer team to go out and multiply so that the points of access, it turns out, are everywhere. There's a lot that needs to be done, but you know, it really does come down to every one of us taking ownership of this and whatever position we may be in, to be available, to be accessible, and to be the kind of person that'll answer the phone in the middle of the night when that call comes.
Yeah. Anthony, we got some sponsors. First and foremost, GhostBed.com/drinking, bro. 50% off everything in the entire store over there. Damn it. How are they doing? How are they staying in business over there at GhostBed.com/drinking, bros? You can't keep giving away this deal, can you? Well, they are. Everything is 50% off. Mattresses made in the USA and 50% off. Pillows made in the USA and 50% off. Sheets made in the USA and 50% off. I was talking to my homie Rich Bernstein over there last night, and they got a new product available for pre-order right now. And it's a fun one. It's a GhostBed massage topper, a revolutionary at-home massage product designed to help you relax, stretch, ease pain, and expedite muscle recovery, all with the outstanding memory foam comforts that they are known for. Here's some of the deets on it. They got the old patent-pending design. Everything they do has got a sweet patent on it, dude. Their fucking owner's a genius, by the way. So it's a 3-inch gel memory foam, and it's got the cooling technology in it, same as the mattresses, which we all know and love. A plush, ultra luxe, and cool to the touch ghost ice fabric for added comfort. And then 7 preset massages on there, stretching and meditation programs, all with customization options. Big, big fan over there. These guys are always trying to innovate. They've got that massage mattress as well. That's over there. They got Venus Williams collection on there. GhostBed.com/drinking bros is doing everything right these days. My God, I can't wait till this thing gets to my house. I ordered it last night, and I'm fucking amped about it. So what will happen is I'll test it out first. And I'll let you guys know about it, but it's up right now, and you can pre-order it. I'm sure it's fucking great, but it literally just launched last night, so I haven't tried it yet. Full disclosure, and I'm trying to get Lázaro López one as well, just because I want to see his little tummy jiggle on it, all right? Go on over to GhostBed.com/drinking bros today. Use that promo code Drinking Bros at checkout for 50% off. While you're there, you're going to see a 3-year pay-as-you-go program. No interest as long as you have decent credit over there. And guess what? You can stretch it out for 3 years and get the 50% off. That's the key to this. You get the 50% off for 3 years, which is fucking awesome. Go there now, right now, immediately. Get yourself a brand new bedroom set today. Next up, we got firstform.com/drinking bros. Talking about those microfactors, dog. Big fan of these things. It's not just a multivitamin. It's a convenient daily packet with 6 products included in it that provide you what you need on a daily basis to be healthy. Because let's face it, we don't eat the way we need to in order to fulfill the demands of our body without getting the vitamins, minerals, and other nutrients in us consistently. We're going to struggle to reach any type of health or fitness goal, whether that's weight loss, putting on muscle, getting lean, or just overall being healthy. What's in them? What's in these beautiful little packets? Well, you got the antioxidants, you got the multivitamins, the probiotics, the CoQ10s. Help with the cardiovascular function. You got the EFAs, those essential fatty acids, and the fruits and veggies. These are all the things you need to get you through the day in real life. All right. Now, if you're looking to go deeper, peruse their entire website over there. First Form is one of the best supplement companies in the world, in my opinion. Check out that liver detox, by the way. If you're going fucking hard, dude, that shit's amazing. That'll get you up and at them the next day. But these multivitamins are something that you should have every single day. Comes in a box. Boom, there's 30 of them. As soon as the month is over, get another box. You're good to go. It takes the guesswork out of it. You don't have to pull out jars out of the medicine cabinet and line them up. They do the work for you. Head on over to firstform.com/drinkingbros today. You're going to get free shipping on orders over $75 when you use the link. Highly recommend their energy drinks as well. Big, big fan of those. Every time they're in the office, they're gone in like fucking 48 hours. Love their energy drinks and their protein sticks as well. Get the breakfast sausages, dog. Go to firstformfot.com/drinkingbros today.
You know, the that call coming, you guys know about 988?
Sorry, and it's you kind of mentioned this. I'm just thinking about one of my friends who I've gotten so many of those calls from this same person over the 20 years that I've known him. We went through OCS together. And those calls are not always like, hey, Tulsi, I really could, you know, use a friendly ear. Sometimes those calls are angry and like whatever's going on, like I'm the target. I'm like, okay, let's talk, man. Yeah. And it's not always, as you said, it's not always just like, okay, man, love you. It's like, no, let's go. You want to duke it out? Let's duke it out. But regardless, the fact is you answer the call and you engage.
That's right. The call that everybody can make is 988. So like 911, if you need help, if your house is on fire, if somebody's trying to break into your home, 911, the police are going to come. The fire truck's going to come. The paramedics are going to come. 988 is a 24 monitored. If you press the number one, you'll talk to a veteran. If you are a veteran, you press that number one. There's somebody sitting there waiting to talk to you that wants to talk to you and has resources. It's easy to throw darts at the VA. Bureaucracy is what it is. It's broken. It's one of the many reasons why our founding fathers wanted a small government, and that they knew that capitalism, the free market, and privatization are oftentimes better solutions than anything the government could ever do. We've kind of seen that time and time again. And the VA, we have people here that are high level in the VA. They care. They want to help. They're looking for ways to help. They're literally sitting right next to you. And in some instances, their hands are tied. Sometimes they're not. They're trying to find solutions just like we are. They care. There's not a doubt in my mind. And access is a hard thing to get. But 988, put that to memory. You should be able to tell anytime that somebody calls, if you need help or if somebody else needs help, you can just pick up the phone and call 988. And it is 24-hour access to somebody sitting there that wants to talk to you and to heal your and to hear your story and hopefully help you heal.
Damn.
Sure. I mean, everything that we do requires infrastructure, right? Like, most people don't do well without infrastructure. That's why there's almost 10 billion people on Earth now, you know, or there will be by, what, 2035 or some shit? I don't even know what it is.
It's a lot of people.
Yeah, it's a lot, right? But it's because we've made things a little bit easier, which is not the worst thing in the world. But I don't think it's a great idea. I mean, what's the net benefit to veterans, the veteran community, to sit around bitching about the VA all the time?
None.
Like, you feel better, you're part of the group that's bitching now? Shut up. I'm tired of hearing that stuff. You know what I mean? So Tim alluded to it, but we have a system of government in America called federalism, right? Where our founders had this beautiful and brilliant idea that power should reside at the lowest possible level. Well, that means responsibility resides at that level as well, right? So if I don't want to hear anybody say the VA failed my friend. You failed your friend, if anybody did, right? It's not always the case. Sometimes some people, it's tough, man. It's not a zero-sum game, right? We're not going to win every battle. But the idea that we're trying to blame some monolith institution instead of, you know, ourselves is a problem. It's a real problem because it's not going to get solved that way, frankly, right?
No, I think that's right. And all three of you have mentioned, I want to shift to another point here real quick. You've all kind of hit on, and maybe to the group out here with us that own businesses out here that are hiring people today, we kind of talked about the individual, we talked about what we do to support that. I would be interested to talk a bit about how American industry, American companies, how can all of us that have an opportunity to bring a veteran in, I'd really be interested, maybe Tim, go to you first on this, because you run a bunch of businesses, it is. How do you see the role, what's the role of the American business, our industrial capitalism, in this problem set?
Yeah, man, I really believe in free market. I'm a small government libertarian constitutionalist, so I always look to free market as a solution. And my companies, we employ 75% veterans work for me, and I love them. Yeah, we have a different culture compared to many others, and it's a ton of fun. I got Murder Row when you first walk in. It's like a Delta Force dude, and the next one's a Navy dude that we all make fun of. You know, the Seaman's literally the second door, and then you got a 10th group guy, and then you have a PJ, and it's an amazing place. And Carl, wherever you are, I love you. Our CEO in the back there. It creates such a magical environment to have veterans there, but they also come with, you give them purpose, they will work to the ends of the earth. And they're so amazing. So, you know, it was fun to make fun of Bud Light when they made the worst marketing decision in history and had this absolute idiot hold a can. But Bud Light employs more veterans than any other company that I know of. And the corporate and free market solution, making sure that people are financially secure, is one of the greatest things that you can do for an individual, where they're not worrying about how they're gonna pay for their bills, if they're gonna be able to take their girlfriend out for a date. And on the employer side, having those type of people as part of your team, it's first very fulfilling, it's a ton of fun, and absolutely hilarious. I have no idea why another reason why I love Black Rifle, when that went viral, when Starbucks says they're gonna hire 1,000 immigrants, and Evan Hafer says, I'm gonna hire 1,000 veterans, like that's what blew in the world. You know, and that was one business owner, that was one entrepreneur that took a stand and said, no, man, I'm gonna do the right thing by the way of the American people and by people that serve this country. And think about the impact that Black Rifle has had since then in such a positive way. That was one person. Now what can you do?
No, I think that's good. Tulsi, super interested in your thoughts. Since you've been all sides of this conversation, from Congress, right, military leader, civilian entrepreneur.
Yeah, I mean, Tim put it perfectly. I've brought veterans onto my team in every job or role or organization that I've been a part of. And some of the non-veterans who've been a part of the team, honestly, there's a little bit of jealousy there because they recognize that there's immediate rapport. And there is just a kind of mission focus that sometimes it takes other folks a minute to get used to. You know, I can't speak enough about the great assets that our veterans are to any organization, any task that's delivered. And so I think that it is truly those who lead by example. Don't, and I talk about this all the time, you know, it's great to say thank you for your service on Veterans Day, but what are you doing every single day of the year to truly value? If you value someone's decision to serve our country, don't talk about it, be about it.
It's awesome.
Love that.
Damn.
Yeah. Tim is right on the money with this. America is this idea that individual liberty and personal entrepreneurship are the ultimate inoculation against tyrannical bullshit, right? That's what this country is. And what's more American than starting a business?
Nothing.
And servicing your community, right? Giving people things they need so they don't have to go somewhere else, right? I mean, it gives you purpose. It's in the notes, it asked the question, like, what effect did it have on our mental health to start businesses? It definitely gives you responsibility, something that you own that you're responsible for, right? Which is what human beings require to stay driven. I think about the trope of the dad who didn't want the dog and now he's got a dog and he loves it and the dog loves him. Of course that's how it works, right? Of course that's how it will always work as long as the dad is not a weirdo. So it's like this is just our biological programming manifests itself in the way we behave every day. You know what I mean? It's not that complicated, right? It's the stick and the carrot, right? The stick is the fear that we have. And unfortunately, again, as I mentioned before, we don't have the fear of death so much. So it puts us in a precarious situation sometimes. So what do we fear? Because fear is a tool, it's a weapon. It's not intrinsically good or bad. It's like thirst or hunger or pain or whatever. It just is. So what do I do with that fear? I put it behind me. And what is the fear? It's letting Tim down, letting Tulsi down, letting you down. right? That's my fear now, because I'm not afraid of death anymore. And then what's the care? What am I looking for? It's to build a better life for my family, or build a better community, or whatever it is, right? So one of the primary ways that you can do that is by starting a business. And I tell people this all the time. If you really believe in small government, you need to start businesses, right? Because when the government shows up and nobody has their hand out, they don't have any power there.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. Hey, and real quick, we talked about, you know, veterans are good, hire them on the team. My boss is in the second row, so see, boss, you made a good decision bringing me on the team. Just want to get that out early.
Hey, that was smooth.
Yeah, it was good, right? Exactly. I snuck that in. Yeah, good. You always never miss an opportunity. It's good, because I want to start my own business if I need the boss on my side. No, on another note, though, back to the group, we talked about industry, but veteran service organizations. I mean, Sarah are doing amazing work with the Independence Fund. Right, we talked about what she does with justice-involved veterans. Awesome. How can this organization, we talked to people out here, some veterans themselves, or individuals that want to help. What are your thoughts, and I'm going to start with you, Dan, on veteran service organizations and how veterans could engage, or how just American population civilians can engage to help empower veterans through that line of work?
Sure, yeah. I mean, money. Nothing gets done without money. These 600 guys that they were talking about earlier, who have been to Operation Resiliency. The only way that happens is with American taxpayer dollars, right? Like citizens deciding that, you know what, I'm going to be part of the solution to this problem. Maybe I'm not in particular need right now, right? So it's my turn to give. That's how life works. That's what I would say to people.
Yeah, Tim.
Yeah, there's another swamp. And that other swamp is some NGOs. When you look at some veteran service organizations, some nonprofits, some 501c3s, they're despicable. They're pure evil, just taking money. You get to vote with your dollars. In the same way that when we looked at Target, when they had LGBTQ stuff everywhere at kid level, and they're clearly targeting kids, and we're like, nah, I'm not going to shop there anymore. I'm just not going to do it. Or I'm not going to buy Bud Light. Or whatever that choice was, you got to vote with your dollars and you saw immediate impact to the bottom line as they start firing people and hiring new people that are going to have different values aligned with yours. Well, similarly, there are some organizations, they need to die on the vine. They are rotten to the core. Some of them have been public, some of them haven't. I'm never going to disparage anybody. But what I want you to do is take the individual responsibility of doing the research and looking into the organizations and seeing how they spend money. How much is actually project spends? Are they really doing things that are aligned with their mission? Dr. Bauer, can you raise your hand, sir? That man right there has one job. Yeah, Dr. Bauer. One is to make sure that the fiduciary responsibility to the board, that we are doing the right thing with the dollars that are coming in. The second thing is that, and I think it's a way more important thing, there's a mission. And in that mission, we break it down as to these things that we are allowed to do as a nonprofit. Are the ways that we spend money aligned with those values? If they're not, we don't get to do them. He helped stand up my nonprofit for my schools that we're launching. We launched 50 schools this year. We're going to launch 500 next year until we burn Department of Education to the ground. And I'm not joking, we're going to. And Dr. Bauer spent a lot of time helping us craft what the mission looks like to make sure that we do the thing that we said that we're going to do. So vote with your dollars, both on the private side, in the capitalistic free market sense, and then supporting organizations that legitimately do God's work of saving people's lives and helping veterans. So vote with your dollars.
Tulsi?
Yeah, I agree completely. Do your research before you write a check. For the veterans here or those who support veterans, if there is a specific niche or there's a specific area that you are passionate about where you may have personal experience where veterans are being left behind, or there's an opportunity to provide support, get some mentorship from someone who's started a nonprofit and go and start one yourself. I think it's one of the coolest things that I've seen with a lot of our peers and a lot of our friends is you've either lived through it or you know someone who has. I talked to someone recently who is recognized, he was a former recon Marine.
Hoorah.
Giving you a little bit of credit here.
No.
Liking it.
He recognized that a lot of male combat veterans are dealing with low testosterone. and it's very hard to get that kind of treatment approved, but it's also having an impact on their mood, their ability to sleep, their emotions. It has a huge impact on their quality of life. And so he is starting a nonprofit very specifically with a partner in the private sector to help provide this service to those male veterans who are in need. It's a very niche area. I talked to a four-star general the other day. I brought it up to him. Awesome leader. And he was like, I haven't heard about this. I need to know more about it because this is happening within our ranks. But if there's an issue that you're passionate about and you don't see one of the big organizations already tackling it head on, go and take charge and lead.
I want to add to that because the data is overwhelming. So the average 21-year-old American, absent any of the toxic exposure or traumatic brain injury, any other stuff we deal with, the average 21-year-old in America today has the same level of testosterone as the 65-year-old had in 2001, right? So that's how quickly it's gone downhill.
Can you just say that one more time?
Yes. Did you hear? I mean, you can tell, right? You can tell. So to repeat what I just said, the average 21-year-old male in America right now has the same level of testosterone that a 65-year-old had in 2001 because of hormones and food, heavy metals, all sorts. It doesn't matter what it is, right? Now, if you map that onto the veteran community, these people have infinitely more exposure to those things than the average person, right? So we have a hardware issue that needs to be solved before, because all the money in mental health gets spent on software, right? We're just now kind of getting into gut health, which is interesting because 96% of serotonin is made in your gut. We probably should have figured that one out a little sooner. We're behind the curve on everything, but it isn't just going to counseling or telling somebody, oh, I had a rough day. Like, okay, well, I'm good for that day, but what about into the future? And it goes back to what Tim was talking about what does it mean to be resilient? We need to set the bar very high for these people. What does that roadmap look like for somebody who is getting out of the 82nd Airborne today? Because in their mind, they just want to go rest for a while. Because I've been there. I was like, all right, I got to go not get yelled at for a little while, right? And get my life back in order. But what does that even mean? I had no idea what resources were available to me. I had no idea what I was going to do, except for maybe go back to school and stuff like that, right? So you put a guy that is in the apex of the psychological trauma he's going to go through. He has done nothing because there's no institutional knowledge about this to deal with the hardware issue he has. And now he's got no purpose as well, right? And we wonder aloud, how could this have happened? Of course it happened. It could only have happened this way.
Hey, this is Sarah's giving me. We want to engage the audience here. I'd add just one thing on the what Tim had said earlier, but I think all the panels, Charity Navigator and Charity Watchdog are two websites that you can go to and look. And they do a really good job of looking at all of the nonprofits that are out there, breaks out their board. But what's most important, I think this is super helpful. It tells you what percentage of the dollar donated actually goes back to a veteran. So you'll see some of those organizations will take 65 to 75% out of what you give for their administrative operating costs. Others are significantly lower, so I absolutely agree with that. Hey, it's been my honor and pleasure to do this, but Sarah, I think we got some audience questions. I'm going to turn her.
You're not done yet.
Oh, I'm not.
Yeah. And before we go to the audience, Tulsi has a new book that just came out for Love of Country. It's amazing. I started reading it last night. Dan running more podcasts than you could possibly imagine, happening out of one studio. Both successful entrepreneurs. They have a million other things that they could be doing. When I launched my book, I didn't see the light of day, like a regular day, for about 90 days. It was nonstop. So the fact that she's taking time out of the book launch, the most important period for the launch of a book, to be here, I think that's just a big testament to Tulsi.
For being here tonight. I'm a friend and supporter of Sarah's organization, and I've learned about Operation Resiliency, and I know Tim has been involved quite a bit in that. Can you talk a little bit about how that has helped bring the platoons back together in the support network that you have when you bring the people back together that you fought overseas with, and
yep.
those weekends that you spend together? Just explain that to the group.
Yeah.
And
Man, I love my brother. I love my sister. I love my mom. I love my dad. And, you know, like, I got the same blood as them running through my veins. I love the brothers that I deployed with more than I could ever describe. You know, we sat there for hours staring at the side of a tree, you know, with nothing to talk about. I know the way that he sounds when he's sleeping. I know the way that he breathes when he's anxious. I know, like, what he smells like when he's scared. I know what I can trade with him for to get a go in Ranger school. I know, you know, like, I know more about this person. And then we go to war and we experience the worst thing that one human can do to another human. We experience in war, and we experience that together. And what Operation Resiliency does is it takes that organization that went to war together and they bring them back together, maybe for the first time since they were downrange together, and let them have community, let them have connection, let them have immediate rapport, let them and of course, you know, during that period of time they're together, they're also getting resources and counseling, but most importantly, they're getting that community. They're getting that magic that exists only within service of having the opportunity to spend time with somebody that you truly love, that you lay your life down for. And that is you know, it's a program of record for TIP. Operation Resiliency is privately funded by donors, and they go and they bring a military unit that deployed downrange. They get them all back together, man, and they get to hash it out. And good things happen, bad things happen, and through the process of their time together, there's some serious healing. So it's great. It's an amazing. I've been to a few of them, and as an outsider looking in, man, it's magic. It is absolutely magical. Great question.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, use your big girl voice though.
Okay. I'm Erin Tamayo. I am a lowly civilian, and I met. Can you hear me? Okay.
There we go.
I met Sarah Verardo in January 2021. And as a civilian, Veterans Day was wave a flag, say thank you for your service on Veterans Day. And then I went to dinner with her in February because our girls became friends. And she, of course, wanted to check me out and make sure I was a decent human before she allowed her child to come to my house. But anyway, and we had dinner and I heard the story of her life and I was overwhelmed. And I felt horrible as an American. And I have no military service, but I can get on, watch the news, or I can get on social media for 20 minutes, and I'm horrified at our country and how there are, you know, people on college campuses saying death to America. So I can only imagine how a veteran must feel to go off to war, serve our country, and come back to, you know, back in the day, Americans appreciated when their service members went away. And the scenario these days is so less patriotic. So my question or my thought is, like, what do we do as civilians? How do we work on our children to create an atmosphere of appreciation and admiration for our country and our veterans?
Well, Tim and his friend Matt are doing it, and I think set a good example for how to be the change. You know, I could talk to you all day about the reforms that are needed within the Department of Education, the problems with our school system, the consequences of the fact that we no longer truly teach civics or about the Constitution in our public schools. These things are not a part of the curriculum, so it should be no surprise why recruiting numbers are so abysmally low when kids growing up have no idea why anyone would want to die for our country in defense of freedom. It should be no surprise to see young kids on campuses saying, "I am Hamas," when they have no identity or attachment to what the values and principles of our country are. So there's a government piece to this, of course, that is necessary. But in the meantime, you've got a couple of guys who said, "Hey, we need to do something not only for our kids, but for kids across the country." So they started a school, and it's turned into a lot more schools, soon to be a lot more, empowering other leaders and other parents to not just be victims to the problem,
but actually be the solution so we can raise a new generation of leaders?
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead. No, don't censor yourself, Tim.
It's so hard. I just hear Sarah be like, go, don't do it. We cannot have pussies anymore. We need... Yeah. We need parents to start being parents again. Nobody's going to raise your kids but you. You have to teach them values. You have to show them what's right and wrong. A teacher's not going to do it. I promise you that. They're going to do whatever they want, what is not in line with your values. They're also not going to make them tough. They're also not going to give them the most important thing, which is courage, integrity, and character. That comes from you. So, like, we're not doing these schools. You guys are doing these schools. So, Apogee has a lot of things, but ultimately what we're doing is sovereignty. What Dan said was, being an entrepreneur means I'm never sticking my hand out asking for anything because I'm doing it myself. If you walk up to my family and you say, hey, I'm going to give you this experimental medicine, they're not going to take it because my kids are freaking athletes and they're so incredibly healthy. If you injected COVID into the side of their neck, they'd be peeing it out like 5 seconds later as they're climbing a tree, eating elk and eating free range chicken eggs as my son's trying to attack one of the dogs with a spear. Like, this is my home. But then, like, you think you're going to come and try to offer him something that he doesn't already have? We're already giving it to him. And more importantly, he's able to do it for himself. And that's what sovereignty looks like. So to answer your question, Americans forged their existence out of the wilderness, right? And then we had somebody that said, hey, we're going to tax you on this warm beverage. And we said, no, we're going to throw it in the harbor. Then they killed a couple of people in Boston. Then we murdered all of them on the continent and sent them over the Atlantic. That's what we did. That's what American means. We are rebellious to the core. And we have just gotten so comfortable and we've forgotten what it meant to be an American. We have to be strong, we have to be courageous, we have to be self-sufficient, we have to be sovereign. Financially free, emotionally free, spiritually free, educationally free. I want nothing from this government. I want them to stay out of my life. And until you can say that, you're not in a position to tell them what to do. If you don't know how to fish, if you don't know how to hunt, if you don't know how to clean water, if you don't know how to educate your kids, I'm not telling you have to teach them calculus. If you can't teach them arithmetic, maybe don't be throwing stones, right? Yet again, the responsibility is on us as the individual to solve these problems.
By the way, I think the tax rate when all that went down was 2.5%.
Yeah, like 58% or what I just paid this year. Sorry, now you're getting me mad again. I just relaxed, and now you're like, spike me back up.
Well, you know what? Oh, I know. And my pastor is here, Pastor Moore.
Hey, Pastor Moore, great seeing you again. God bless you. Looking forward to seeing you at church tomorrow. All right, my man. God, hey, just grab my jacket and pull me back, and I start getting forward. Again.
Oh my God, I wasn't prepared. Anyway, my brother is a lieutenant colonel in the Army. He's at year 18, his wife is a major, and we have guardianship of their four children when they overlap deployed, so the military is up.
Okay, hi. What I had said is my brother, John Thomas, he's a lieutenant colonel in the Army. He's on year 18, his wife, Joy, is a major in the Army. She's also year 18. They both graduated from West Point. I'm a very, very proud military sister and sister-in-law. I also have guardianship of their four children when they overlap deploy. So even though I'm not in the military, I'm very, very, very close to it, and I see what it has done to our family. And I'm very concerned, especially about my brother and what he's come home with multiple times. And I guess as a family member, of course I check in. I talk to him every day. We're in a family group Wordle chat. I'm sure most of y'all are too. But I feel like I talk to him every day, but I worry about him a lot. And what would you say is the best way of truly checking in, not just the little thing? Like, how do we best support him? I feel like he drinks a lot. I feel like there are other things that he's doing to self-medicate. And I don't know how to truly connect because there's so much I know he can't tell me. I know that there's so much hard that he doesn't want to tell me. How as a family member do I best support him and his wife, but how do I truly best support my brother?
Dan, you want to take a first shot at that?
Sure, yeah. I mean, when people are, when they're in quicksand, a lot of times your first instinct is to try to pull them out of it, right? This is a particular kind of quicksand that only the person can pull themselves out of, right? So giving them, I think there's a lot of different things you could do. One is make them aware that you're aware that they're struggling, right? In a non-judgmental way, obviously. If you're a dude, if it's one of my buddies, I'm going to call him an asshole. But if it's, you know, somebody I don't know, that's how I would approach it. And another thing is to take things off their plate, right? I mean, it's, I'm sure you've all experienced that situation where your brain just starts beeping. It's like there's a high-pitched whirring noise in your head. You're spinning so many plates, you don't know how you're going to get anything done for the rest of the day. And you just said they have four children as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe just babysit the kids? I don't know. I think resources as well, like people that are still in, they have no idea what's out there, frankly. And the families usually don't either. To be honest, I would assume, based on my experience, that your sister struggles as much as he does, either directly from her service or from his. And a warrior without a strong family unit is like an infantry platoon without a supply chain, right? Like, we can be okay for a little while, but then it's over. So, you know, it might be, I'm not a psychologist or anything, but it might be better for you to handle her, frankly, because I think it's his buddies who are going to bring him around, usually.
Tim Tulsa, you want to take a shot at that?
Yeah, I have a very good friend of mine whose husband went through multiple very serious deployments that resulted in him having a very extreme, struggling with an extreme situation of post-traumatic stress. He wouldn't leave the house. He wouldn't get on a plane. He was very restrictive in the things that he was comfortable doing, was self-medicating, all of these different things. And she didn't know how to help him. She watched one day, she brought home a plant. The plant was on the front porch. She forgot to keep watering the plant and the plant started dying. One day she came home and she saw her husband John watering the plant. Then she saw the next day that he was taking care of the plant. And he brought this plant back to life, and it was the first time she saw life in his eyes in a really long time. Long story short, she got him and their two little girls on a plane. They moved to Hawaii, bought a farm, and his being able to cultivate the land and grow food to feed his family and to take care of others was how he found his healing. And so there are so many others, you know, some have found their healing through working with animals or horses, and there are a lot of opportunities out there. Every one of us is different. I think as your family goes through this journey, being able to help provide that encouragement and support as he finds that thing that will help him move forward and heal is so important to be able to do.
Man, I love your heart. That's the sweetest thing in the world. And I hope you guys could hear in her voice the sincerity and emotion. And that's normal. George Washington, it's literally carved in marble in Washington. It says, when we assume the soldier, we didn't lay aside the citizen. And what is the citizen? It's all of us. I hear some of you guys separating whether you served or you didn't serve. It doesn't matter if you served. You're still a citizen first and foremost. The soldier is a second byproduct of that. We just chose to do something else in serving. But we're all just citizens at the core, and individuals and humans. And those million little decisions, finding up. So if there's a metronome of like tick, 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 tick. And each of those is his pattern of what he's doing, of when he's drinking, the things that trigger him. There's opportunity for you to step in a half heart, in a half beat, to do something else. Hey, today I'm taking the kids and I set you and your wife up to go on this thing. I would love it if we all went canoeing together, if we And that's going to be tailored to the individual. And like, I don't know what his hobbies are. I don't know what his interests are. But because you care and because you know and you have an opportunity better than anyone else in this room, you could be like, hey, Tim, I need you to go help with this guy. I get it all the time. I get thousands of them on Instagram. I can't. I don't know him. But you do. And that's the coolest part, is every single one of you have a way to help someone else, and nobody else can do it as well as you can. You know, so like, there's gonna be a call to action right now, and you're thinking about all those million little things that you can do. Like, all I see is hope at the end of this problem. I really see opportunity for all of us to go identify, if you thought about that person and you think about their life and you think about whether it's a plant or farming or exercise or, man, doing something new and adventurous, that's gonna be something that's going to break that rhythm and give them a chance to do something new the next day and new the next day and new the next day, and there'll always be a tomorrow.
All right, thank you. Well, one last question from Bill Thompson.
Bill.
Hi, guys. Can you all hear me? So we're kind of talking about, I guess, like the post hoc or how we fix things after or we've identified problems. I think one of the things, at least for my time in the military, that we overlooked is kind of a hardening of the American mind before we send them to war, I think gets overlooked. One of the things for me over my multiple combat deployments that helped me, and I've heard Tim mention it, is stoicism, whether it's Marcus Aurelius. For me, it was Epictetus, reading his books. And that was something totally overlooked. And I could also have a total different question on chaplains and how they've been neutered in the military, but I'll skip that for now. But I think, on the forward side, before we send people off alone and unafraid, how could we better prepare them programmatically through the military to build that resilience? Not saying that people who are subject to this lack resilience, that's not what I'm saying. But certainly for me, whether it was combat, reviewing noxious media, I was really helped by stoicism. Like, understanding that I choose to be affected by things, or I can choose not to be affected by things. And these are ideas that I think we don't talk to our young men and women about before we send them off. So I would just like your guys' commentary on that, because I think it's super important that there's a coddling of the American mind going on, where we're telling everyone they're special and they're unique flowers, and there's all of this BS that's happening. I'm interested in hardening the American mind. And I think that would help this in the final analysis. So I could drone on all day, but I just would like your guys' commentary on that.
I love the preventative medicine. I'd love to hear from both of you guys. I think an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. All those millions of little things, that keeps you from going into that dark point. So like, I exercise every single day. Before I went and grappled today at noon, Dan, myself, Af, we go and did some Tabatas and some EMOMs in a hotel gym before we went and taught a jiu-jitsu seminar, before we go to meet President Trump. Like, this is just the way that it is. We had a healthy breakfast of Avo toast. Haven't anything to drink today. I'm not going to be drinking any time that I'm on the road unless I'm sitting next to my wife. Like, these are things that you do preventatively to make sure that you never fall into this dark place. And, you know, like, we are the next generation that we shape. You walk up to my 8-year-old and ask him to quote Marcus Aurelius, that little kid's gonna quote Marcus Aurelius. You know, and it is on us, again, the responsibility on us is to raise that next generation. And I believe to harden the mind is first to also harden the body. And those two things happen in conjunction as we work through the spirit. I love that addition. I gotta work on that better. Sorry. God bless America. Thank you, Jesus. God. Yeah. Jesus and I, we got to figure things out. We're gonna get there. We talked a little.
There's intervention on the horizon. We can sort that out. Yeah.
What do you do? What's your preventative medicine? I think that what you pointed out is so important. And it's important for us to recognize, where do our service members come from? And you mentioned this, is what's happening in our society is this culture of victimhood and this softening and, you know, participation prizes and all of the things that are contributing to people who are not anywhere near mentally tough. And then you look at, okay, well, these are the people who are going to basic training in whatever branch of the military, and how the military has not recognized the problem to take this preventive action.
along with saying, okay, well, yes, we should implement some kind of mental toughness training from the very beginning, from that basic initial entry training, but also having that be an ongoing thing that does not just become another death by PowerPoint slides, but actually have these small group conversations on an ongoing basis is necessary if we want to try to get ahead of this. The thing that we haven't talked about here is the extremely high level of suicides within the country as a whole from people who have never worn the uniform, and the fact that in the military, it is service members who have never deployed who are committing suicide more than those who have deployed. All of these things are connected, and the solution starts with every one of us as a society and as a country and taking on that responsibility.
Yeah, I mean, we already do this to some degree for all the physical stuff. Like, you go to basic training, you go to the Q course, then you show up at your unit, your squadron, whatever, and they teach you how they do things, right? We already do this. It's already a part of the way that we in-process a new warrior into whatever group they're going into. But we at no point has the U.S. military made it a point to tackle resiliency before the trauma, right? It's never happened before. It's very bizarre. Even basic, like asking what ordinary civilians can do, raise strong kids, that'll help when we have to fight whomever, the aliens or that Tucker was talking about, right? Whenever we have to fight aliens, we're gonna need some strong kids. The point of basic training is to sharpen a dull blade, right? To turn that tool into a weapon. We can't do that if it's just a puddle of melted steel, right? That's not gonna happen.
Hey guys in the very back that are talking, I just want everybody to be really quiet for a second. Hey, shut up in the back.
Ready?
All right, listen. I wanna make sure everybody leaves here with things that you can do. 988 is a number that you need to put permanently into your memory that you can hand off to somebody and that you can call. The second thing is preventative medicine is without a doubt the best thing that we can do, like on a daily. But asking the question is, if there's a friend, if there's a service member, if there's a brother, if there's a sister that's struggling, you have to have the courage to be able to say these words. Have you thought about suicide, and do you have a plan? And their response to that is going to dictate the next few moments of your life about saving that person. You can save that person. If they say, man, you know, I don't know, they have. The next part is, okay, well, have you thought about how you're going to do that? You know, I was thinking about, and whatever they're going to say, this is the opportunity for you to interdict, for you to inject yourself into that person's life and save them from a decision of passing pain on to others and taking a permanent solution to a temporary problem. So you can do those two things. Can we? Can we do those things?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's awesome. And as we close out, I mean, Tim, I think that's a really good charge. I'm gonna hit each of the two remaining panelists. What are your last thoughts here for this this group?
Yeah, turn the good thoughts into action. You guys are already here, so I get the feeling that you're already well bought into this mission. But take this crusade on as a personal challenge to be able to bring others into the fold. Share some of the things that you might have heard here tonight that you've never heard before. Support great organizations like the Independence Fund who are actually doing the work. We didn't get into the Justice Initiative. Go in and sit on a veterans court one day in your community. Just go and sit there and watch and listen to the stories of those veterans who are there standing before the judge and the kind of great support that comes out of those experiences. There are great solutions happening in local communities across the country. Find which one is the right fit for you and help be a part of that solution.
Hey, Dan, you want to close this out?
Sure, yeah. My message is to the veterans out there, and it's simple. No one's coming to save you. No one's coming to save us. Why should they? We're the warriors. We are the leaders, right? At no point should we have ever considered to sit around and wait for somebody else to come handle this problem. Understand that what you've been through
hasn't broken you. It's given you perspective and resilience against pain and chaos in a way that other people will never have. It just, you can't if you, unless you've done it, right? And when we carry our wounds with honor, and when we take care of our own community, it gives other people permission to go out and sacrifice for what they believe in too, right? Like that is the weight that you're carrying, and yeah, it's heavy sometimes. But luckily, there's a lot of us, right? But it starts with you. One man with courage makes a majority. We've talked about this before.
Love it.
This psychology thing is extremely contagious. So the fight, and therefore your duty as a veteran of this country, doesn't end because you came out alive, because you survived. It doesn't end. It's just beginning. We're in a historic time in this country. Things are not great. You know, we can't afford to lose any of these people. It's sad when they die, but we can't afford it. We can't afford to lose them, right? We need these people here. You're a warrior, man. Be one, yeah. Right? Like, whatever that means to you, it meant something at some point. That's why you signed up. It means something to you. And as Dr. Campbell mentioned before, your life doesn't belong to you. So keep your fucking hands off of it.
Yeah, so again, a really quick shout out to Sarah and the Independence Fund for pulling this together tonight. Right? And a big shout out to, and a Semper Fi to the Old Army Brewing Company for allowing us to occupy this space and engage. And my final shout out to encapsulate this, and I appreciate the honor to be up here, but hey, stay in the fight. That's whether you're supporting the veteran or the veteran yourself, stay in the fight. So stay engaged, look for opportunities to help, look for opportunities to take another step. That'll take you to a place you really want to end up. Thank you, everybody.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.